You're listening to Building the Game with Jason and the Other Guy Who Sucks.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday. What day is it? December 7th, 2015. This is episode 2000. No, it's the year is 2015. This is episode 184. My name is Rob Couch. Hi, everybody. How are you today? I'm flying blind, flying solo here tonight. Just screwing up the intro and making a mess. Really, really making a mess. So I thought, I just thought I would go for it. I don't really know what to talk about or what to do. I had some stuff written down, but the banter here in the beginning of the show is always kind of a freeform thing. So when I'm alone, it's kind of tough to know what to talk about. I guess I could talk about Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving was this past weekend. Of course, we recorded an episode. What's that? Somebody's just knocked on the door.
What?
I was waiting for you to interrupt me.
I was going to see how long you could go on your own.
Yeah, well.
What I was worried about was listeners heard it was just you and they turned it off.
So. Oh, okay. Hey, surprise, I'm lying. Jason is actually here.
Nice. Nice knock at the door. The reason I panicked because I wanted to be like a door opening and then be like, walk over. Hey, sorry I'm late to my house where you're already recording. Yeah. Anyways, yeah. So, Thanksgiving did happen, though.
It sure did.
For reals. Like, it actually happened.
For realsies. Yeah, this right. Our last episode was recorded in advance of Thanksgiving. So, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. There was a couple friends over for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Some family the next day and some family the day after that. So, it was a lot of people. But we never went anywhere.
That's good.
Which is the opposite of what you did.
Indeed. It is the exact opposite. We drove south and then north on Thanksgiving Day to see my wife's family and my family. And then Christine went shopping on Black Friday, and I stayed home and played Vigi games.
You got the better deal.
Yeah, tell me about it, man. Because I spent about 9 hours doing nothing but playing Fallout 4.
I thought you were going to say, because I spent about $900 sitting on my couch.
No.
While my wife was out shopping.
Yeah, no. For Saturday, Sunday, we drove down to Southern Illinois to see my aunt and uncle and a couple of cousins. And it was a good trip. I mean, it was a long trip. It's about 6.5 hours, I think. So it's a drive, especially doing it back and forth in 2 days. But whatever, it was worth it. We had a really good time.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. Turns out Fallout's a really good game.
I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. You should get a PS4 so you can play Fallout.
Yeah. Let me just do that.
Yeah. Hey, Christmas is coming. So.
Yeah. Somebody posted online where somebody had taken a mod and turn the power armor into the Buzz Lightyear armor.
I saw a picture of that.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah.
Because it was so bright in the drab world of Fallout.
Yeah.
Pretty great.
Yeah, it's cool. I also, when we got home on Sunday, I made the mistake of looking at Steam. And Steam was having, I don't know if it was their Black Friday sale or Thanksgiving.
Pre-Cyber Monday, maybe.
Pre- or Autumn's. I don't know. There were like three different sales going at one time, and I spent about another $30 on games on Steam. I got the whole Space Quest collection.
Wow. Man. The whole thing?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's like 5-6 games. Like
no,
that.
that's cool.
Yeah. I was a Sierra kid growing up with, Sierra adventure games were my jam. I didn't discover LucasArts till I got into high school.
Okay.
You know, so growing up it was King's Quest, Space Quest, Heroes Quest. Those are my games. So Space Quest, and I never did play all of them. So I'm excited to crack at those.
All right. Sounds exciting. Mm-hmm.
The new King's Quest game, by the way, pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah, there's new one. It's an episodic thing. The first episode I really enjoyed very much.
All right.
All the same feeling as the original King's Quest games, but without some of the problems that they had, you know? But anyway, right. You don't seem to care.
No, not really.
Not even a little bit.
I'm trying.
That's fine.
So we played some games recently before Thanksgiving.
We did. Yeah.
We got together with some work buddies and played some games. Two of the people, kind of newer game players, or just not more infrequent game players.
Sure.
And that was a good time. We played Las Vegas, which was great. It's like Las Vegas is one of the the best gateway games.
You bet.
Gamer games. And I don't think actually, I don't know that I've ever said that before. It's like, there was kind of a realization there. Like, duh. I mean, it's a game where I'm like, you're not gamers and I need you to play a game.
Mm-hmm.
The only game I think simpler than that, that I would show to new people would be, Roll for It, which is the same type of genre, less decision making, less fun too. I mean, it's a fun game, but it's not as fun by any means as Las Vegas. But what I love about Las Vegas is how spiteful everyone gets really quickly.
So quick. Like, so quick, yeah.
You've got people who know each other, but not super well, being terrible to each other four rounds into the game.
Just getting nasty.
You know, just like, oh, wait, I could screw you over.
Yeah.
I'm going to just do that.
Yeah, it's true. You know, and while we were playing that, I was thinking about that. And I've played Las Vegas a lot over the last 6 months, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's always fun. It's never not a good time. But while we were sitting there, I was thinking, you know, I'd really like to play Roll For It again sometime, because I remember that was fun.
It was fun. It's another game where, like, you can hose each other, but not as much as, I mean, it's not as direct. It's like, hey, these are the numbers I got. Sorry, I'm going to do this. Like, in Las Vegas, there's pretty much always a choice.
Right.
And you're actively saying, I'm going to hose you.
Mm-hmm. It's not as mean-spirited,
right?
Basically. But yeah, but I think I've only played it a couple of times, and it wasn't even Gen Con this year. It was Gen Con 2014 was the last time I played it.
Okay. Yeah, next time we get together to play games, I'll bring it.
Yeah, that'd be a good time.
Especially for the newer people, I think that's good.
And another simple dice game like that is an easy one for them.
Right.
Yeah.
I think this was going to say about that, but we also played Codenames.
Mm-hmm. We probably played that four times, did we?
Yeah. Because it's one of the beautiful things about that game is it plays so fast that you can just constantly... So let's talk about that for a minute. And then I played it again, and I want to talk about that. But we have something that we've promised, because Alan, our friend from work who listens to the show, was there. And we promised to bring this up on the show. So we have to bring it up.
Yeah.
So Rob thinks I'm the worst Codenames player ever.
The worst.
So I disagree with Rob, but that happens a lot. So I'll say this. Maybe I am the worst, and Rob's not going to like this feedback, but Rob is not nearly as good at Codenames as Rob thinks Rob is at Codenames. But you are pretty good at it. You're just not as good as you think you are.
So
just like I'm not as bad as you think I am.
Okay. I'm not going to pretend for an instant that I'm the best Codenames player on the planet, because I've only played now, if we played four times that night, I've played a total of five times. Okay.
Maybe six. Yeah.
Maybe six. But and to be fair, so I think the first time we played that was at Gen Con, and it was fun, but it didn't really click for me. It was much, much better this time.
Yeah. Well, we were with a group of, like, at Gen Con, there were too many people. A couple of times, there were like six people on a team. And I think the sweet spot is two to three players on it. Like, plus your spy master, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm doing the spy master bit, and there's two to three players.
Yeah.
That is the best,
I think,
number.
So. That's ideal. Yeah.
Any more than that, and it starts to get a little too talky.
Too talky.
And,
yeah. It's just, yeah. Nobody can agree. But, the specific clue that we got in a fight about here.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about it for sure.
And let me tell you, I've pulled everyone that I have seen since this happened. Okay.
Right.
Okay. And I'll tell you the results of my poll after we introduce the issue.
Okay. I feel like this poll may be skewed. It's probably not scientific, but whatever. It's I've also pulled everyone that I've seen. With mixed results, which I'll also give after it. So, Rob and I were on a team, and we actually, Rob and I thought we would just kill this game together, right? Because we know each other really well. We're into the same things. And that is usually a recipe for goodness in this game. So we were really excited. I was the spy master, which we refer to as the caller, but.
And this was not our first game. Was this the last game or second to last game of the night? I don't know.
No, this was the first game. No.
No, it was not.
It wasn't. Because the first game, it was Alan and I, because we were afraid you and I on a team was going to be too solid.
Right.
So Alan and I were on a team, and I gave a clue in that game that I'm still kicking myself for, because I could have given him a really good clue with the whole, I was trying to get him to guess bark and superhero, so I said Guardians, like Guardians of the Galaxy, because I know he's into that. And I could have just said Groot, and he would have gotten both, and we actually lost that game, and that still is annoying me that I didn't say Groot.
That's not the only reason you lost that, but anyway.
It was close, though. We only lost by one or two.
No, it was three.
Okay, well, whatever. But anyways, one of the things just I want to add that deceived me was the first couple times we played, there were amazing combos out there.
Mm-hmm.
There was not very many great combos out there when any of the games we played.
Sure.
Two was very hard to get. Most of the time we just gave up and went for one. Because
mm-hmm.
one is very easy to get. Sure. You can be so hyper-specific.
Sure.
It's guaranteed sure. they'll get it. So anyways, I'll tell you what the words I was trying to get Rob to guess were. But mm-hmm. the clue I gave Rob was, you can say a proper name, mm-hmm. Even if it's more than one word. I said,
yep.
Promontory Point. Now, I wish I would have said, now Rob says this wouldn't help. I wish I would have said Promontory Point, Utah. Because that would have been slightly more helpful, but
it would have been a little bit more helpful, but not probably right. still would not have gotten it.
So should I tell them what the words I was trying to get you to guess, which happened to be right next to each other, which is why I thought this.
Yeah. Well, now, before you say what the words are,
okay.
I want to give listeners a minute to think about Promontory Point, and I think probably you either know what that is or you don't.
Right.
Okay. But I'll take you through my thought process. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Promontory Point. I did not immediately know what that was. Okay.
Right.
So I'm thinking,
and if you had, we can both agree that if you had known what that was, the answer was absolutely clear. So I said Promontory Point
sure.
2.
Yeah.
So and the words were next to each other
right.
in the right order.
Right. So if I had known what that was, it would have been an easy choice. So that's fine. So I did not know what that was. And so I'm thinking Promontory Point, well, this has got to be some geographic feature or location or something. And when I think about a point, I think about, typically I think about a peninsula or something that's sticking out into the ocean. And so, and promontory, implies that this is a very, an important location, a big point. You know,
right.
a very big peninsula or something.
Right.
And so I'm not super well versed in my geography. Okay. To be honest, you know, I'm a product of the public school system in America. Okay.
So am I.
So, my best guess was that Promontory Point must be, the tip of the big peninsula in Antarctica that points at South America, right? And
it's not.
Well, I know that now. That I didn't actually bother to look up what that peninsula is called. But anyway, that was my best guess. And so I picked something that was related to cold or snow or so. I don't even remember what I picked.
Right.
So what the words were.
The words I wanted you to guess were yeah. gold spike.
Yeah.
Now, so here's my thought process, uh-huh. right? I saw that, and the first words that popped into my head when I looked at Golden Spike were Promontory Point. Because I went to public school, but apparently paid attention in U.S. history class, because that's where I learned this. Mm-hmm. So Promontory Point, can I say what it is now?
Yeah.
I wondered why it was called Promontory Point, like Utah, why it was there. Promontory Point is actually the point of where some mountains like come to a point.
Okay.
And that's like the valley right there.
All right.
Which makes sense for what they were doing. What they were doing there was building the Transcontinental Railroad.
Right. And that's where East and West came
yes,
together.
Yes. East and West came together. And what did they do at East and West when they came together? They put a gold spike in, and there's Promontory Point Museum that it may actually be called Promontory Point Gold Spike Museum. I'm not even, or Golden Spike Museum, something like that. Yeah.
Something like that.
I Googled it to check. But even after I told you that, you had no idea.
Never heard of it before.
And which is weird to me because that was like a big thing I learned about in mm-hmm. school. Like, and that's something that I still, you know, 20 years later, remember mm-hmm. clearly. And I've probably never heard about it since then. It's not like they talk about it in like
ancient history,
things.
As far as American history goes, the railroads are not a big deal anymore.
Fair enough. But you are also into, in my defense, you're mm-hmm. also into Western stuff.
Absolutely.
So that's why, I mean, in my defense, mm-hmm. you could say it was a bad clue, but I expected more of you, Rob Couch. So the only person so far that I've pulled that actually knows what that is uh-huh. my wife.
Okay.
And she still needed some help.
Yeah.
So
okay.
it's not like I said, and she was like, oh, that's where the railroads met.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I have asked my wife and I asked my father and his girlfriend and I asked my wife's family and I asked my extended family down in Illinois. And no one has ever heard of Promontory Point.
Wow.
None of them. So, okay. I think the end result of this is that was a very good clue for those two specific cards, but a really bad clue if you want anybody to actually give you the right answer.
Who doesn't know? See, here's the one problem I have that I forget. I forget that I have a memory for mm-hmm. really random bits of information.
Mm-hmm.
Better than most people. Mm-hmm. So like I can remember details of very random things.
Mm-hmm.
important stuff, I'm really bad at remembering. I keep a lot of notes so that I remember things and a lot of reminders.
Uh-huh.
But when it comes to like random bits of information, I mean, the stuff I can tell you, like that I remember, is crazy.
Yeah.
But I forget that like that's not everyone, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And no one else at the table knew what that was either.
No. And maybe one person was like, oh, I've heard of that when I said it.
Yeah, but didn't
but
know what
it
was.
But they would never have guessed right, that. Yeah.
And I figured, I left there thinking maybe I'm just stupid. So the first thing I did when I got home was I asked my wife. My wife was homeschooled. And so she didn't learn anything but geography and American history, basically, growing up. And she had no idea. She had no idea. And she's generally much, much better about that sort of thing than
when
I
you
am.
Said what it was she like, oh, yeah, or
she,
no?
She's
still
no,
there.
What?
Wow.
Still never heard of it. So,
so what I take out of this is everyone with me is stupid.
No, what I take out of this is that whatever teacher you had in grade school that taught you that had some kind of a chip on his or her shoulder about how everybody's forgetting some piece of railroad history.
Honestly, to be fair, it was in high school that I learned this. I had... And Steph did too. Probably the best history teacher. You're like, he's the history teacher from TV that like is in the movie where he's uh-huh. like changes your life.
Uh-huh. Okay.
He was that kind of history teacher. Yeah. He was the first guy who like showed me the Wizard of Oz and mm-hmm. was like, this is what the Wizard of Oz is really about, man. Like, so yeah, there's a whole thing. If you don't know about the Wizard of Oz and what the Wizard of Oz is actually about, you should look that up.
Okay. Like, I'm not sure what you're talking about.
The original book of course, gosh, man, you know nothing, Rob Couch.
Hey, I'll have you know, I took film classes in college and they didn't talk about Wizard of Oz.
Okay. Well, it was more of a political thing, but basically the original book, especially
is
an allegory to a lot of things that happened in America
mm-hmm.
at the time. Like the silver and gold issue was a big thing. So like Dorothy's slippers were actually silver in the book.
Oh, really?
And they made them ruby for the movie cause they could do color.
Makes sense.
That made more sense.
Sure.
But each character represented someone, and the words that were used, even in the movie that were taken from the book, were sometimes very odd. But if you knew what the connections were, they weren't odd.
Hmm.
So it was really interesting. Anyways, okay. So...
worth looking up.
Yeah. So it was an interesting piece of history. And when I first he started talking about it, I'm like, this is crap. But no, it wasn't. He was actually super smart. Like, so the teacher taught me a lot, including Promontory Point, Utah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so that's that. So that's exciting stuff.
There's a geography lesson for today.
Yeah. So I played Codenames again.
Okay.
I played it with Steph and Rowan Will, and we wanted to see who the best Codenames player was, right? Mm-hmm. So this was our plan.
Let me guess. Steph.
No, actually. Oh. I think she was... So we all ended up tying except for her, but it was just like... Everyone was just really evenly matched, so I'm guessing we're all pretty bad.
Hmm. I believe that. Yeah.
So okay. we went around, just saying like doing our we basically like Ro and I were on a team, then I was on a team with Will, then I was on a team with Steph. So everyone was on a team with everyone once, and then we said who's going to be the winner, and it was two wins, and Steph had 0 wins, which wasn't her fault. Hmm. Like they were going to win one. And she gave a clue. The clue she gave was maple. And Will's like, syrup? Yep. Pumpkin. And that was the assassin. Now, apparently,
that sounds like Will.
He had put maple syrup in a pumpkin pie or something.
Okay.
So, but
well,
like,
sure, it's a sugar. Yeah.
But I mean,
not?
it was just funny because
that's
like,
really funny.
Because it is stuff's like, no. yeah. So anyways,
that's great.
But that was really fun. That was just playing two players. Like, so mm-hmm. we each had ourselves and one person on the team
and it worked. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's more fun when you have more people, but they actually said you can play, they have rules for a two player game where it's
really,
yeah, it's you and the other person. One person calls, the other person, is guessing. And, every turn the opponent gets one. Automatically gets one. So you just have to try and get ahead and then stay ahead.
Gotcha.
But then the goal is to see how many points you can win by. And there's like a score chart
so
for how good you've done.
It's almost like a two-player solo game. In a way.
What? Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. Because you are a team. So it's mm-hmm. a team solo game kind of, right?
Yeah, team solo
versus
game. Right.
So it's a co-op game, actually.
Yeah.
Is what it's.
Sure.
Or it talked about how you can do three players with two callers and one person guessing,
mm-hmm.
and it's caller versus caller. or one caller and two people guessing, and it's guesser versus guesser. So
sure.
That was pretty cool. I thought that was neat. That was neat. We didn't try it that way, but Steph and I might try it that way sometimes just to see what it's like.
Sure. Cool.
So yeah. So let's we should probably talk about a topic here.
I suppose. If you want. What were we doing today?
We're gonna talk about boards versus cards and how the decision making process in a game, in game design, what makes you choose one over the other?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some pretty easy thoughts on that. And then we can try and get a little more in depth into why, and maybe even talk about some games that are one or the other and why they might be better or worse if you flip flop them. So there's some thoughts.
So the first thing that comes to my mind is that having a board facilitates organization. And it helps with items, with bits, with pieces that need to kind of connect with each other, you know, or where positioning of these pieces is important.
Right.
Sure. And obviously there are other ways to do that, of course, but that is a nice thing about a board. The classic idea, of course, is that you're moving pieces around a pre-drawn track on your standard roll move games or whatever, and that's, you know, that's fine. But I think we want to maybe approach this from the broader gamer perspective, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so those are the first things that come to my mind about why boards are good, and a good time to use them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know if you have other thoughts.
Yeah, so the first thing I thought was cards are cheaper.
sure.
So if I want to make a game with less bits, some bits maybe, but less bits, I'm going to use cards, right? Because I know that I can put it in a smaller box and put it in a different price bracket. And I know, don't design for that, but whatever. It's easier to sell a card game than a board game. I truly believe that. I know you sold a board game. Shut up. But
I sold one of each, I guess, technically.
Yeah, so the Epic Monster Tea Party is not really...
There's not any cards in the game.
It's a meeple game.
Yeah.
But there's also not a board.
Right.
So.
It's kind of a weird...
It's a bad
outlier.
Game. Yeah. Yeah, it's an odd game, you know?
Yeah.
So, whereas I do think if I want a game with lots of bits, I'm just going to say, let's make it a board game. It is easier to track, but I also think that lots of bits kind of lends itself possibly to a bigger game, which is easier to put with a board for multiple reasons other than just organizational reasons. But also, you know, if you want to make a bigger game and sell a bigger game, having a board helps to do that. It says I can have a bigger box. I can have, you know, more things like that. I prefer card games as a designer, mostly because I prefer to play card games. Card games are a little more portable. Which I think is cool. I feel like it's hard to have a board game that doesn't have some cards, right? I mean, because you need stuff to do stuff, but it's hard to have a card. It's easy to have a card game that doesn't have a board.
I'm not sure the easy is the right word there. I'd say more common.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking of the board games that I'm looking at over here. Most of the board games that I have also have cards in them because it's difficult to design a board game without cards.
Yeah. So it's very uncommon to see a board game without cards. But it is,
well, I mean, it goes without saying, right, that it's extremely common to see a card game without a board because...
Yeah, because it's... Yeah. Okay, maybe we're arguing about something that doesn't matter here. Yeah.
the other point is, you know, I see games like Great Heartland Hauling or Best Treehouse Ever that both use scoring tracks that are made of cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got like three cards put together and that makes your scoring track. And I think that's really clever because it says, here's a way to score with a few bits to do so without having to have a whole board to do so.
Yeah.
There's a game that was put out by Bucephalus, back in the day, who don't exist anymore. So it looked like a really not good game, called Kachina. We got for free. This was before we were doing the podcast.
They'd
given us some free games.
I never played that one.
Yeah. To help them out with some stuff. And then they ended up not needing help, but they just said, keep the games. So actually I think they went out of business. So we just kept the games, but anyways, let me send these back. But that game has a board that's like, what do you think, like maybe this is 9 inches by nine, like say ish.
Yeah, 9 by 9.
Nine by nine ish to track the score. That's the whole function of the board, mm-hmm. is to track the score.
Mm-hmm. And that it basically enabled them to put it in a bigger box.
Right.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, I was like, and then I took the board out because I'm like, this is great. I'm going to totally use this in a prototype.
Yeah.
But but I was annoyed because I thought, what's the point of this? I mean, mm-hmm. you're basically, you're cheating. Mm-hmm. You're saying, give me a bigger shelf space. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, that was made 6 years ago, probably, maybe even more.
Probably a little over that.
Yeah. It might have been 7 or 8 even. So people have gotten better, I think, with more and more games being made about finding interesting ways to do scoring that doesn't involve having a big board.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they just thought, oh, this would be easy. But I feel like they thought, hey, this can make this game sell for more and make the shelf space bigger.
Sure. And we've talked about box sizes being right. silly before. Yeah.
So that's just another thought I have about sure. that. But
so, so I'm thinking now about games that use boards that maybe don't need to, and right. other boards that don't, or other games that don't use boards and might benefit. So the first thing that popped into my head was Smash Up.
I was just going to say the
right.
same
okay,
thing.
Yeah. So Smash Up, you have to play cards on these bases, right?
Yep.
And those bases, you just put a card down. So would there be any benefit? And in fact, it's probably a pretty good comparison to compare Smash Up to King of Tokyo, you know?
Yeah.
Because King of Tokyo uses a board for, what, 2 or 3 locations?
One. Oh, two, yeah. if you're playing a 6-player game, a 5-to-6-player
right. game. You're either
game.
In the city or you're not in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that could easily be a card. So why is it that King of Tokyo uses the board, and why does Smash Up not use a board?
Well, I can tell you King of Tokyo uses the board because that game has a lot of bits, and they want to put it in a bigger box, mm-hmm. and they want to sell it. I mean, really... because that game also has the standees, which take mm-hmm. up space in
true.
The box.
True.
They need more box space anyways, so mm-hmm. might as well do a board. In their defense, it's a small board. It's like...
Oh, yeah.
It's about that 9-inch
yeah,
size
nine,
board.
I mean, yeah, 10 by 10, something like that.
It's small.
It's not like it's a big board, but it does use a board. And the board is not necessary for you to play the game.
0% necessary.
But what it does do is, it like you just said, it does help with some organization.
Yep.
You know? And even if only to be... A thing in the center table where you can say, these bits we're going to put on this side of the board, and these other bits we're going to put on this other side of the board.
Right.
If only for it to be a landmark to separate things, mm-hmm. it's worth it in that case.
Right. And I could see Smash Up benefiting from the same thing.
Yeah.
The only thing about Smash Up is with the way you play cards on the bases, I could see how a board might get too cluttered unless it was huge.
That's true. I could see that.
I'm surprised they haven't put out with Smash Up with all the expansions, like the big board expansion. And it's like a huge uh-huh. board.
Or the playmat or
yeah,
something.
That changes
yeah.
the game somehow. That would be cool.
Yeah. Stone Age is the next one that comes to my mind. Yeah. So Stone Age has a board, and yeah. it's basically just there for you to organize your resources. But to be fair, there are spaces, it's work placement game, so you need something to tell you if all the slots in a given space are full of workers or not.
I think, though, if that was an indie game, mm-hmm. like not published by Rio Grande,
there'd just be cards.
It would be cards.
Yeah.
And it would just lay these 10 bucks cheaper.
Right. Location cards on the table.
Yeah. And it would work just as well. I mean, honestly, it would be not as easy to use. Mm-hmm. That's a game where, say that's how the game was made and we still liked it, we'd mm-hmm. be saying right now, you know, that might benefit from a board. So you could certainly work without a board on that, and mm-hmm. I stand by. If it was an indie game published by a smaller company, it would not have a board.
Probably not.
Because it doesn't have to have a board.
But
it's nice.
It is a good organizational tool.
Right.
What else you got up there?
I'm just looking around here at stuff.
Now, obviously, any game that involves a map, a board is probably going to be a good way to go for that, you know, placing pieces within an environment or a location or whatever, that can be really important.
But, sorry, go ahead.
But, you know, when I think back to when I was a kid and I played D&D, uh-huh. I played second edition, you know, nowadays, you would never consider playing D&D without having minis on a tactical grid on your table on a map, right?
I think most people wouldn't, yeah.
Yeah. When I was a kid and played D&D with my buddies and my brother, we didn't do any of that. We didn't have maps. We didn't have grids. We didn't have miniatures.
Right.
We were playing second edition, and we were all just imagining it in our heads. And we were rolling dice and hit, and the DM would say, yeah, you're close enough. It's fine. And we would just talk it through. So Depending on the style of game, you know, maybe unit placement is not such an important piece.
Right. That's something that I think, to talk about D&D for a second, where having that board super benefits D&D, mm-hmm. If you are in a combat-based game,
mm-hmm.
because otherwise you're like, I'm going to hit that guy. Which one is that? The one with the scar on his face? Is that what you said? Yeah, the one with the scar on his face. Oh, no, he's too far away. Like, and you're like, are you sure he is DM, or are you just being a jerk? Like, but there are other times, like when we first started using a mat, I actually didn't like it
mm-hmm.
because I felt like it was easier to snow the DM. Like, to be like, no, I think I'm close enough because blah, blah, blah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, what it does is it changes the focus, right?
Right.
So D&D with a map is basically a combat game. It's like a unit combat game.
Right. With a story.
With a story, right? But if you take that away, you take away miniatures and placement and ranges and all that kind of stuff, then it's more about story, more about the role playing,
right.
the characterization. So it changes the focus to a large degree.
Right.
Yeah.
And since I'm such a big fan of the kind of the tactical strategy battles mm-hmm. within D&D,
mm-hmm.
I think that's why I really now have grown to like the mat.
Yeah, and I like it fine. I would be interested in playing it again, though, without that, or really any other RPG without that.
Well, and a lot of the indie RPGs are designed to never use
right,
a board.
Right, and I kind of like that approach. Yeah.
And then you could feel snooty about yourself.
Yeah.
How awesome right. you were for designing that game.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't need a board.
And now I feel a little bad talking about it all the time, but Saloon Tycoon, okay? So Saloon Tycoon started out as a game with tiles and cubes and cards, and that was it. And there were no boards, uh-huh. right? And you were building in a certain shape on the table, and that was all there is to it. But once I made the switch to just saying, okay, well, you know, you can maybe build farther out than I originally decided, and then I gave point bonuses to how far out you built,
mm-hmm.
then that necessitated, it didn't necessitate it, but it said there's going to be a benefit there if there's a board to place your stuff right. on, because then you can have the number right there, and you don't have to remember the number to add it up later. The number's right there, and it's always going to be there.
Right.
For you to remember, number one, what that space costs, and number two, what points you're going to get for that at the end of the game.
Suddenly, it made the game easier. And that's why the board is good.
That's why the board's good, right?
It's not a must-have, but the game would take longer and be a little more chaotic.
And scoring would be really difficult without
it. Yeah. You wait, you're three out. How many points is that? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's four. Okay.
Yeah.
Whereas you're just like, it's four. Like, boom, it's right there on the board. It says so.
Yeah. We're talking a lot about boards, though. Should we get back to cards?
Cards, yeah. So, cards. I like cards.
I do, too. Do we want to differentiate between a score track and a board?
Yeah, because to me, a score track is just a way to keep score.
Yeah.
Unless you do it, you know, crappy like that Kachina game did, mm-hmm. where it was like, oh, here's a big board mm-hmm. to keep score. You know, Stone Age, to a degree, I feel like has a board also to keep score.
It does, yeah.
The board helps you keep score.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually, I think, would be the hardest thing about the game if you didn't have it.
Sure.
Because you'd have to be doing a bunch of math or something and, like, writing it down. Or,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because the scores in that game are so high.
Yeah.
That it would be hard.
Mm-hmm. Nap time for
good
Jason.
Track. Yeah. I'm yawning over here. So, with cards, though, yeah, I mean, I think, too, we could differentiate between a board and then a game that uses pieces to make a board, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For instance, like Forbidden Island.
Mm-hmm.
It's all tiles.
Mm-hmm.
There's no actual board. And a board, honestly, wouldn't work for that game unless you had like a really fancy, expensive board.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could use a board like, what's that ghost game you have?
Phantom Society?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's got those flip pieces that lock into the board.
Lock into the board, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's actually a very specialized board. You know,
I'm just saying, something like that would actually work for Forbidden Island.
Oh,
you got
okay.
pieces that pull in and you flip them out yank them out.
I still never played Forbidden Island. I really need to sometimes.
It's really good.
Yeah.
So, you know, another game like Las Vegas does not have a board.
Mm-mm.
That's okay. But that's not a card game. Well, there's cards in the game actually. Yeah. And you really could just have special cards that you put down. It's got those kind of player board size boards
mm-hmm.
that are just for each of the casinos. But
yeah.
I like the boards though.
I do, but I mean, you could do that just all on a single board.
Yes.
You know?
And then it might actually justify the size of the box.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Because that box is stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic game. Mm-hmm. Super stupid box.
Yeah.
So here's one more thought I have. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you're going to go micro, obviously cards are better.
Yeah.
I don't think there are any micro board games, are there? I mean, there's...
Coin Age, right?
Yeah, but that's... I mean... But the card, the board is a card, right? And while that's super clever, I would say that's not a board. It's a card that you play on.
It's true.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, okay. So, kind of bottom line, from the perspective as a designer, I want to use a board when a board makes playing the game an easier experience, or I don't want to say easier experience, but it simplifies any parts of the game that are not so fun. Things like keeping track of information. If I can use a board, be it a big board or a player board or whatever, to make it easier for the players to track stuff and organize stuff, because that part of the game is often not fun. Of any game is often not fun. The upkeep stuff, right?
Right.
You know, if I can use a board in some way to make that process easier and cleaner and smoother for players, then I definitely want to use a board. Mm-hmm. But if that doesn't add anything or doesn't make anything easier, and the functions of the game don't require it, then I'd rather not use a board.
Right.
Because I like to be able to throw a deck of cards into my pocket or into my bag when I'm taking stuff somewhere.
Yep. Yeah, I would say I only use a board when I absolutely have to. In fact, I think I've only prototyped one game ever that used a board, which was Sandbox Showdown.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right.
I struggle to think about putting a board in a game. Like, I guess I could use a board for that. So I have designed games with player boards. And I maybe even did a prototype of a game with a player board, but I don't know. I don't think so. So anyways, yeah. Well, that's that.
Okay, cool. I'm going to pitch a game now.
Pitch a game now.
I'm going to actually re-pitch a game that I pitched a while ago. And this is one that has been a bit of a builder favorite, actually.
Yeah, this one's gotten a lot of love from builders.
A lot of love. It's a game that we were asked about on the last episode, or two episodes ago, I think. And I don't recall which builder asked about it. So I apologize, but... it was super digital of you to ask that question and bring it back to my head, because I started thinking about it again. So I hope everyone remembers Smithereens.
I remember Smithereens.
Yeah. So to recap, I want to hit up the theme, the setup for Smithereens again. The idea I was thinking at the time about engine building games, and I thought, well, what if when the game starts, you've already built your engine and the game is about destroying it. Right. And tearing it apart. So that was kind of the core goal with Smithereens. And thematically, the idea is that all the players are flying steampunky airships through the sky, right. And you're having a big battle, and you're all going down, right? Everybody is losing. You're all going to crash, and you just want to be the last one to hit the ground. You want to be the last guy standing.
You want to win.
Right. And so the first pitch, the first version of this game was heavy on picking and assembling components of your thing, and then as components would fail, you would lose stats, you would lose abilities, you could jettison them to drop weight, to gain altitude, and so on and so forth. And so it was about tearing your engine apart,
right,
as you play the game. And kind of on a fundamental level, it's fun to build something that's bigger and better. It wasn't fun for me to build to take something that was already cool and tear it into small pieces. It wasn't fun for me to disassemble something to make it less cool.
I did think that was fun, but it's just me.
So there were a lot of problems with that game as I'd pitched it before, but I think for me that was kind of the root of why it didn't click for me. So, but thematically, I still really like that idea that we're all going to crash and burn here. So I'm coming at it again with a different approach. It becomes a card-based game. Okay. I mean, it always was, but it's simpler card-based game.
Okay.
Okay. So start of the game, everybody gets a, deck of cards, and it's the standard deck of 10 cards for each player. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'll get into card types in a minute. And then at the start of the round, at start of the game, let's say there's four players, you do rounds of drafting. And through that round of drafting, well, several rounds of drafting, every player will eventually take 8 special cards, okay?
Okay.
That they will basically use to build and customize their airship. Then they put those cards, they shuffle those cards into their main deck, and then they start playing the game with those 18 cards, okay? On your turn, you're going to shuffle your deck, and actually, depending on what cards you get, through your drafting, you might get even more cards on top of that. But at any rate, so as you play the game, everybody starts at the highest altitude possible. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
On your turn, you're going to shuffle your deck. You're going to draw, I think just 3 cards. You're going to draw 3 cards.
Okay.
And then you can take whatever actions you want. But you don't have to discard at the end of the turn. Cause at the start of every turn, you're going to draw up to 3 cards, or you're going to draw 3 cards. So if you save one from this turn, you could maybe have extra actions on your next turn.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right.
So instead of like a Dominion where it's play what you can, discard the rest of your hand, it's play what you want.
Right.
Keep whatever you want. Do you have to at least play a card?
You have to play at least one.
Okay.
Right. Okay. But, and I think you're going to have like a maximum hand size up to 9 or something
okay,
like
that. Okay. So you could only cheat it for a couple turns.
For a couple of turns.
You had to.
Right, right, right. Because I don't want you to get too crazy. Okay. So, one of the things in my original pitch was that you were going to lose altitude on every turn. Okay.
Right.
And there was a lot of math involved in figuring out how much altitude you were going to lose because you had to factor in engines and boosters and on and on. And it was just too much to keep track of. So on this one, you're not going to automatically lose altitude on every turn. When a player shoots at you and does damage to you, that's, you don't technically take damage. You just lose altitude. Simplifying and streamlining that whole process entirely. So every time you take a hit from somebody else, you're going to lose altitude. And one hit equals loss of 1 altitude. And we'll say everybody starts at 16 altitude.
Okay.
I'm just picking a number to start with. So when you play a card from your hand, you play it on the table, it goes to your discard pile.
Uh-huh.
Alternatively, at any time, you can burn a card from your hand. Burning a card takes it out of the game, completely throws it back into the box. When you burn a card, you're going to gain 1 altitude back, but you can never use that card again.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's a sacrifice, right? If you're going to burn that card, you're done. You're never going to be able to use that thing again. The idea is that you rip something off your ship, threw it into the furnace to generate some more hot air to fill up your balloon that's holding you aloft. Okay, that's kind of the thematic idea of that.
Or even if you just jettison it, like previously, I mean, that still let you gain a little bit of altitude.
Exactly, right. So, yeah. So that's the thematic justification for that. So I'm probably going to start reading from my notes here now.
Okay.
Let's see. Let's talk about card types here. So there are 5 card types. We have armor cards,
mm-hmm.
nitro cards, attack cards, ammo cards, and special cards.
Okay.
Special cards, like I said, are the ones that you get in your drafting.
The other ones are all the base cards. So those 4 types are ones you start with already.
Exactly. So armor cards. So armor cards are, you're going to start with 4 armor cards in your standard base deck. These cards can be played onto the table after being drawn in your hand. They soak 1 damage for each armor card that is dealt by opponents. But once they're hit, they're lost. Back to the game box. Okay. So...
Oh, okay. So you could burn them to gain altitude.
Right. Or you can install them, just put them out there in front of your ship, and they're going to basically prevent you from losing altitude. But it's a one hit and gone.
Okay.
So, yeah, basically they're a way for you to take a few hits without losing altitude. Every player starts with 4 armor in their base deck. They can get more by taking special cards and opening drafts. So some of the special cards might allow you to get extra armor cards at the start of the game.
Okay.
You can also burn an armor card to gain 1 altitude, but... You know, it's a trade-off. Okay, next, nitro. Nitro is kind of like fuel in this. Mm-hmm. It's an energy source.
Right.
These cards can be played to adjust a die roll during an attack. So one card lets you adjust the value by 1. Okay, and if you have 2 nitro cards in your hand, you can adjust that die roll by 2. Or if you're going to do 3 different die rolls in your hand, and you have 3 nitro cards, you can use 1 on each. But you have to assign it first before you roll.
That makes sense.
Okay. When played in this manner, they're discarded, but they will be shuffled back in your draw deck. So they're gone for that round, but they get shuffled back in, so you might be able to use them again later. But if you burn it, you're going to gain 2 altitude.
Oh, okay.
Because it's nitro. It's fuel. It's super powerful right. stuff, right? Okay. Then there are attack cards. Attack cards are basically armaments, weapons that you have installed on your ship, okay? So each attack card represents a gun. All right. Attack cards contain a difficulty number. You're going to have to roll a 2d6 and either hit or exceed that difficulty number to successfully attack. There's no defense. Okay. It's just if you hit the number, then you choose a target. You roll a dice. If you hit the difficulty or higher, you hit the other person. They take the 1 damage.
And the target is just a person.
Yeah, another player.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah, another player. Right. So that'll cause them to lose armor or altitude, whatever they have out there. Attack cards can only be used once on a turn, unless this is modified by an ammo card. They can only target one opponent and are discarded when they are done to be reshuffled back in your draw deck. Okay. But again, you can burn them to gain 1 altitude. Okay. Ammo. These cards allow you to use a single attack card multiple times on a turn, though all attack cards from one card must focus on a single opponent. So I have an attack card and I have 2 ammo cards. So I can, and I want to attack you. I can attack you once with that attack card, and then I can play one of my ammo cards to attack you a second time, and then my next ammo card to attack you a third time.
Okay.
All 3 are separate attacks, so I have to roll for each one.
Right.
But if I only have the 1 attack card, I can attack you, but I can't then attack Christine on the same turn because right. that gun is targeted on you only.
So now the gun goes away at the end of a turn, right?
Yeah, it basically you need time to reload it. And
the only thing that would stay is armor.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So you may be holding ammo in your hands or holding a gun in your hands until you get more of the other so that you can
right.
do a lot of damage in one turn.
Right. So. Standard attacks don't have any range on them, but some of the special attacks might have range. You know, so if it's going to do a whole lot of damage, you can only hit it if they're adjacent to you.
Or if they're the higher than you, say.
Exactly.
For instance, like, so.
Exactly. Yeah. Right, right. Okay. Again, you can burn ammo cards to gain altitude. Okay.
Right, so say you had a special gun that was like, I can hit people, but only if they're at least 2 higher than me.
Yeah.
So if during the game they get lower than you and you're like, okay, this is going to be a waste, you could burn that card to push yourself up higher to keep right. a level above them.
Right, right.
Cool.
Okay. So then special cards are let you players get additional ammo, nitro attack, or ammo cards at the start of the game. Or it could be a card that just... And so once if you get that special card, you don't put the special card into your deck. You just set it aside or put it on the table in front of you. And then you take those other generic cards straight to your deck, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, other cards, though, might be specific weapons or specific abilities that do go into your draw deck that you shuffle in there. And when that card comes up, you can use that special power.
Okay.
Is the idea there. That's basically it. I can go through some of the ideas for the special cards that I've got, special card powers.
Sure.
You can, one might let you change a generic card type. So you could change a nitro into an ammo or something like that. So you'd play that card and you put it through your transmogrifier and you would get rid of, if you're changing a nitro into an ammo, you would get rid of the nitro card and you would take an ammo card instead.
Okay.
Okay. And then you would that card to be ammo in your deck for the rest of the game.
All right. That makes sense.
You can. We already talked about attacks that are focused only on people above you or below you or only somebody who's on the same level as you. Something might allow you to attack multiple enemies with 1 attack. You know, a spread shot or something like that. Something I'm thinking like a harpoon cable, where if somebody's above you, you can harpoon them and drag them down.
Okay.
You know. I'm thinking there could be a dive bomb where you play the dive bomb card or dive bomb maneuver. And if you're above somebody, you can drop to their altitude and knock them down the same amount of altitude.
That's cool.
You know, and then standard stuff, you know, let you take stuff out of your discard, reshuffle your deck so you can know what's going to come up next. That kind of thing.
I have a cool idea for one.
Okay.
Let me think.
Okay.
So, all right. What if there was one called like secondary balloon or something like that, right? So when you put it out, you immediately lose altitude.
Mm-hmm.
But there are 2 ways I can think to do it. This is the way I prefer, but you might not like this card maneuver. Like, so I put it out and I immediately lose 2 altitude, mm-hmm. right? So, because basically I just dropped a balloon off the side, right? So it pulls me down.
Mm-hmm.
But then you play that card in front of you like an ammo card. And each turn, you turn it, you tap it, repeat it up to four times. So up to back to the start.
Mm-hmm.
And at whatever point you decide to spend it, that's how much height you gain back. So basically, you gain up to four altitude from it.
Mm.
So it's kind of like an altitude. And so it's like you're inflating the balloon. Yeah. Like,
okay.
So that can be kind of cool because it's a trade-off. Like maybe I'm above you, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got the good gun that shoots me. So I pull that out, push myself down mm-hmm. until that danger passes, and then lift myself back up to try and get past you.
Sure, I can see that. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because you want things that allow them to do stuff that really breaks the rules. Like the dive bomb is great for that, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So those mm-hmm. special cards are all about breaking rules. And the more of those I can come up with, the better, frankly.
Right.
You know, like I'm thinking if everybody gets eight, I need at least 32 cards for a four-player game to make sure everybody gets right. their full eight. And I would like to have more than that if possible.
Right. And you want the specials to be unique. So
yeah, ideally I'm thinking, you know, for cards, there would be a card in there, enhanced armor, and it would get you two extra armor cards, right?
Right.
But, and I think there's going to be two of each of those types.
Uh-huh.
So, but... since there's only four generic cards, that means there's only eight special cards that get you bonus generics.
Right.
Okay. At the start of the game. And that's all that there would ever be.
It'd be cool if some of the cards like were classified as like rams or like something that basically says I'm hitting your ship, right?
Sure. Okay.
So like dive bomb would be a good one. Maybe mm-hmm. there's one that's like, you know, forward crash or something. Mm-hmm. As long as they're with an X, you can crash into them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that person takes altitude damage equal to something. But then have a defensive special card that you don't play. You have to keep it in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then if somebody hits you, you play it and it hurts them and then it's out. Like, so it's like it's a one-time bazinga, like, sure. Oh, gotcha. And then you have to throw it away. So.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, defensive stuff is probably a good idea.
Cards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love the idea of coming up with special
cards.
Right,
so that has to be kind of the bread and butter of the game, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, and that's kind of where I wanted to be in the original idea of it, but I got bogged down with tracking component stats and all kinds of other stuff.
Right.
And so I think by ignoring damage or treating damage and altitude as the same thing,
yep.
it just simplifies that.
It's great.
So you don't have to think about too much of that. And so all you're worrying about is these cards interacting. Likewise, I think... anytime you're about to hit the ground, you have kind of a saving throw option. You could, if you have enough cards in your hand, you can burn them right away, and you can, even if it's not your turn, you can burn if you've got enough to burn to keep yourself from actually hitting the ground. So if you're at one and you're about to hit zero, you can burn one to stay at one. But right. if you're at one and you're going to hit negative two, you'd have to burn three cards to stay at one.
Right. No, and I think that's fair because, I mean, it's a losing game, right?
Right.
I mean, you're still probably not going to win, but if it's really close,
yeah.
that makes you feel awesome because you get to, you know, do that and survive just a little bit longer.
Yeah. So that's the basic idea. I'm definitely going to prototype this and come back to it. I've already started writing cards and working out details of it. So that's very high on my list. I'm excited about the game again, and I think it's going to be... I think it's got a lot more potential than ever now. So
I think so too. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. So that'll be my number one project here going into the winter, going into the holidays and the cold times.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool. How are we doing on time here?
We got a couple minutes here.
Okay.
To do a couple things.
Okay.
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
Tell me what you think of this title for Shipwreck Island. Okay.
For the Game of the Bridges?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I came up with this new idea for a title.
Okay.
No, not with the Game of the Bridges. This is the dice where you're trying to build the ship.
Oh, yeah.
Out of
the
trash.
Yeah.
What do you think of this one? Shipwreck Shore.
Shipwreck Shore.
Because, like, you know, it's like the shore, right? Uh-huh. Is actually a shipwreck, not a real thing. As compared to Shipwreck Island.
Sure. Yeah.
Do you like that better than Shipwreck Island?
I think they're about on par.
Okay.
Shipwreck Island is maybe a bit more familiar in theory because people think about. I mean, what? There's basically an island in Pirates of the Caribbean movie that's Shipwreck Island, right?
Right. That's true. So
Shipwreck Shore is a little different. It stands out a bit more. So less familiar, but maybe...
And with some really good graphic art on the cover, would be like, oh, I get it, right?
Yeah.
You can
even do Shipwreck Shores.
Oh, that's true, too. Yeah. So that wasn't my idea.
Okay.
But I wanted you to judge it as if it were mine. I knew you'd be more honest.
Okay.
Robin Gibson actually sent that in, mm-hmm. and I really like that. That was his whole comment was, Shipwreck Shore! Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, figured if I said it was from a listener, you'd be nicer. So I wanted to see what you said if I said it was my idea. So thank you, Robin. I'm going to consider that. Patrick sent us a message that said, hey, guys, Irish stick fighting? I've never heard of that. Boy, when you said stick fighting, I thought, cool, this is going to be a Filipino martial arts game. But Irish? Never heard of it. That's quite a curveball. Anyway, great idea.
Yeah, thanks. So, yeah, you should look that stuff up. There are videos. I just Google Irish stick fighting, and there are YouTube videos of guys. I mean, it's serious stuff.
It's legit.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure how much overlap there is with the Asian martial arts, but yeah, it's serious stuff.
So yeah, we also had some other stuff here.
You want to save that for next week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
All right. Fantastic.
All right. We actually have a really long email, so we'll read that next time.
That sounds good.
It actually works really well.
Yeah, cool.
So
we're good?
Yeah, we are good.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, once again for listening. We appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland. I am @poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. Go to our website, buildinggamepodcast.com. Jason's got his super exciting holiday sale going on for Water Balloon Washout. You can get 2 copies of the game for $20, free shipping.
True story.
That is super cool. Through there, you can also find links to my games on the Game Crafter, which are the Rumpelbum Academy for Bug-Based Baking, and finish it, the Outrageous Storytelling Party Game. They all make great stocking stuffers, I'm telling you. And I think that's it.
All right, good night.
Okay.
Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Hi, Mike. You were sitting on...
All right. Okay.
I don't know what else. It may have been a shopping cart falling over.
Okay. I don't hear any screaming or crying, no, so we're fine.
It's all good. All right.